Hello, and welcome back to the Zen Embodiment Channel. I'm Corey Hess. These are these bare bones conversations we've been having. Today I have Bo Vandendolder on the page. And Bo is really interesting. He has a lot of modalities he brings to this, to his work. And I wanted to talk with him today to explore some of those in hopes that people will learn about different ways to approach their practice that might be fruitful. So much of, you know, Zen is this form. And so I'm hoping that people can maybe through talking with Bo and listening to Bo feel like they have some options to creatively explore their practice in a deeper way. So welcome, Bo.
Thank you, Corey.
Yeah, great to have you. So where are you from, Bo?
I'm up in Chicago, well, outside of Chicago, really. And I've lived in the Pacific Northwest since 2000.
Yeah.
I'm in Silverton, Oregon right now. So that's about an hour out of Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, in the serious, it's been the serious smoke from the fires down there. And really intense time. Yeah, I hear you. Outside of Chicago, where?
Hawthorne Woods, Arlington Heights, Prospect Heights, kind of northwest suburbs area. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Wow. I grew up in Michigan around the corner. So I grew up in Niles, Michigan.
Which part of the state is that?
It's like nowhere, you know, it's like right here.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Right there, the Chicago's right there, you know, so.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Funny. Yeah, okay.
Spend a lot of time on the beaches in the summer. It's kind of out that way.
Yes. So you practice traditional Chinese medicine, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay, in Silver Creek Acupuncture is your website, right?
Yes, uh-huh.
Cool. And do you do, what would you say your practice is like? Are you more, do you do more herbs? What would you say your practice is like?
Well, first off, I'd say that I at least strive towards a more classical approach. And a lot of people don't know that there's a big difference between what we'll call TCM, traditional Chinese medicine, and classical Chinese medicine. So the school that I went to and graduated in 2008, it was a TCM school. Pretty much all of them are TCM schools, but there's actually a classical Chinese medicine school in Portland as well. And so I studied with a lot of teachers through that program and have since more or less oriented myself more towards a classical approach. And so that looks a little different in practice, mostly the sort of underpinnings and understanding of diagnostic methods are different. The herbal approach is different, comes out of the herbal classical texts. So I do a lot with herbs with patients. I do a lot of acupuncture. I do some body work. I do shiatsu. I do tui na. Some Japanese meridian therapy kind of techniques. Yeah.
Not Toyohari.
Not Toyohari, no. Shido Denme, Japanese meridian therapy.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. And yours, a Zen student, right? And what's Order of the Boundless Way I read? Is that right?
Yeah, so that was my original exposure to Zen and training in Zen. That was in Olympia, Washington.
Yeah.
A group there actually lived and trained there at a small center there for a while back in 2004, 2005, I believe.
Yeah.
Carl Kaizan is a resident teacher there. Fa Long Shakya, he's actually ordained in the Shuyin lineage now too, and the Vietnamese Rinzai lineage through Thich Thien and Thich Anh Yeo. So it's kind of a diverse background for that group.
Yeah. Beautiful place down there, I saw. Really pretty.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. Some of us were talking, we were kind of jealous of the beards.
I'm lacking in that. Yeah, I know.
Cool. But then you sort of have gone further with some other Zen stuff. Is that right?
Yeah. So for the last 5-6 years, I've been training periodically at Tahoma with Shota Harada, which is mostly just, you know, however many sessions a year kind of a thing. Yeah. But yeah, that's been my kind of primary group practice connection for the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, awesome. And would you say both of those have a big energetic component? Or how would you say those two styles differ?
Well, you know, yes, I would say they both do. I would say that through some of my study of the Chinese Chan Shuyin teachings, you know, very strong emphasis on Hua To practice in that line. And so that's been a big part of my own practice. Whereas, of course, as you know, with Harada Roshi, very energetic practice there, of course.
I want to let's talk about your Qigong Taiji practice, if you could, mm-hmm. a little bit, please.
Sure. I started learning Tai Chi and Qigong 2002-2003. I went to Thailand to train with a teacher there for some time, mostly Yang style Tai Chi, intermixed with a lot of Qigong that I picked up along the way. While I was in acupuncture school, I studied with Liu He and Liu Dong. They're a family lineage, a lot of family forms, so very specific to their family. They passed along a lot of forms and taught a lot of students. So I picked up a lot of forms through them. I studied with Pixian Ko I still study with him intermittently, but probably since 2008. He's a fifth generation lineage holder in the Kwangzai Juklung Temple Praying Mantis School. Mostly teaches Yang style, a lot of Yichuan, so a lot of Zhanzhuang standing practice. And there's a lot of influences in his style. But we also do a lot of Qigong. Gregory Fong, I studied with Gregory Fong somewhat briefly, but another Yichuan practitioner. So again, a lot of standing foundation. Bagua, Chen style, Yang style. And then more recently, I've been studying with a teacher, Warren Allen, who has a very diverse background, and we do Yang style, Chen style, Sun style, Wu style. So kind of diverse there. And I've done some Bagua training, the Yin style Bagua with He Jinbao briefly out of Beijing, and some other exposure to some other Bagua styles. A lot of Qigong is kind of part of all of those systems. And I have had some teachers who are strictly Qigong teachers, but most of the Qigong I've done has been in a sort of broader context of other arts, studying other arts.
Cool. A lot of stuff, a lot of practice. Cool. What I want to do is kind of paint a little picture and then come back to what this all kind of means, you know, for your practice. And could we go on now and talk about the Alexander technique, please? And could you define that for us, please?
Yeah, so the Alexander technique, I would say, is a form of kinesthetic re-education. So it means unlearning our lifetime of unconscious habits, of undue stress, strain, automaticity, habit in the most fundamental sense, not specific habits, but habit,
yeah.
habit itself.
Yeah.
And so what it looks like in terms of practice as a teacher is me guiding people through totally simple mundane activities, sitting, standing, getting up, getting down,
right.
With my hands on, helping them develop a kind of conscious control of patterns of their use. So I tend to stay away from words like posture and movement in this context because we like to use the word use, the use of ourselves as a unified whole, not our bodies, not our minds, but the yeah. whole person, the use of the whole person, moment to moment in all activity, across all activity. So whereas certain techniques will employ exercises or forms, with the Alexander technique, we're trying to establish a practice of certain principles across all activity. So there's no categories of activity in this kind of view.
Awesome. Yeah, and there are a couple different kind of lineages of that in the States. And you're in what's obviously there was probably some changes when it came to the States. What's your you went to which school in Oregon there?
The Oregon Center for the Alexander Technique.
And
so that you're right. There are. I mean, as Alexander himself taught, you know, he had a certain training standard, which I believe was generally about 5 years of full-time training.
Yeah.
So that was a commitment that has diminished in the more modern lifestyle and context. So when teachers came over to the U.S., there was a kind of school that maintained, you know, a similar, if, you know, very similar kind of training program, training standards. And that's generally associated with AMSAT. So that's the American Society for the Alexander Technique. There's another governing board organization, STAT, I believe it is, S-T-A-T. There were some other teachers, and primarily there was one teacher who was very prolific in her certification of teachers that did away with a lot of the training standards, that did away with actually a lot of what I would say is the actual technique,
right.
the actual principles of the technique, and kind of brought in a lot of other stuff, a lot of other techniques and ideas, but still kind of kept the banner of the Alexander Technique. And I would say that there is a very real, for anybody who has a trained eye or who has done some training, you know, there's a very real tangible difference between these two schools in terms of what they produce in a sort of embodied, what people can demonstrate, you know?
Right. Cool. Yeah. Yes. Got it. And you work, I think, I read on your website that you kind of mostly just work one-on-one. There aren't really classes for that. Is that right, for Lee Alexander?
Yes, that's true. Although, you know, I would say there's probably a lot of teachers who do teach classes nowadays. But, you know, hearkening back to the sort of Alexander standard, you know, actually when he first started teaching, he lectured and people thought, you know, wow, yeah, I get it, you know. In terms of the concepts, but nobody could demonstrate any of it. And right. so he determined that, you know, without the hands-on experience, without the actual guided experience, people can't produce the effects. And so it's really, really hard to do that in a group context, because you really have to have your hands on somebody. There's just no substitute for it.
Right. And so you'll work, can you give me an example of a normal student, client student that I think you call them students, that you would have come in?
Uh-huh. Oh, well, anybody and everybody.
Right.
You know, and being an acupuncturist, I have my own referral base because, you know, I tend to, you know, think of a spectrum here of the sort of treatment on the one side and training on the other side. When people are coming in for a treatment, it's a passive process in a way, right? And I'm manipulating their system. I'm utilizing techniques that are aimed at influencing them in a particular strategic way.
Yeah.
Through herbs, through acupuncture, through body work, and they're mostly passive, right? They ideally are taking on lifestyle changes and integrating things, you know, that I try to impart as far as health practices. But the Alexander technique, on the other hand, is completely active. This is, you know, the student has to really put it in and really practice it. And so I would say, you know, historically, there was a lot of exposure in the realm of the arts, the performing arts, musicians, classical musicians, you know, kind of peak performance sort of orientation, you know, that people associated the Alexander technique with how do I take it to the next level? How do I really master a craft? And so we see a lot of that historically. That's where a lot of the exposure and knowledge of the technique is. You know, most people, for example, that come to me had never heard of the Alexander technique. And they're, you know, children or elderly people in a lot of pain or, and, you know, frankly, I would say the thing that gets most people through the door with any of this stuff is pain.
Yeah.
People are experiencing chronic pain. They've tried everything and they're still in pain.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of that.
Yeah. 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 Totally. Totally. Right. Okay. So how does the Alexander inform your Qigong or your Tai Chi or some of your movement practices and also the Zen? How do they tie together? I would love to hear that.
Yeah. So, you know, I had exposure to a lot of things prior to saying the Alexander technique.
You're right.
I'd had a lot of treatment myself.
You're right.
I had a lot of acupuncture, chiropractic, massage, etc. I practiced Zen. I'd done a lot of Tai Chi, Qigong, yoga. I taught yoga for years. And when I started studying the Alexander technique, first of all, I would say it was my second lesson that I had.
Yeah.
I had had chronic neck pain since I was 16. I'd been rear-ended about 6 times and each time experienced whiplash injuries. And so through all those years of exposure to all these arts and all these treatments, I always got relief, but I learned to live with chronic pain. And I just assumed that that was just kind of part of my hand. And, you know, I'd manage it. I think it was my second Alexander technique lesson, light bulb moment, pain was gone. I'm doing this. I'm creating this, actually. You know, there are conditions there. There is injury there. There's inflammation there. But I can turn it off or turn it on, essentially, by the way that I use myself, by the way that I carry myself.
Yeah.
Moment to moment in activity. And so that was kind of like, wow, okay. You know, quite empowering in the sense of, this wasn't a treatment. This is something I developed a conscious awareness of what I was doing, how I was doing what I was doing, and that I could change that and that the result would be no pain. With that, I also realized pretty quickly in my early days of training with this that my Tai Chi, from the moment I engaged it, actually the moments before I engaged it, getting my shoes on to go to the park to do my Tai Chi, how much habit was in every single act from putting my shoes on to getting to the park to doing my forms, right?
Mm-hmm.
As well as in my sitting practice, the habits of concentration,
yeah.
You know, we are, I think, addicted in an unconscious way to the felt sense of effort,
yeah,
in all of these practices, how we apply ourselves, right?
Right.
And so this kind of just shifted on me, on my understanding on that level of every single act that I carry out, whether it's this form or this practice or washing dishes. There's so much unconscious habit in it.
Yeah.
And I'm 10 steps down the road.
Yeah.
Without even realizing it, with all of it, and so I carried this belief with all these practices. I'm doing my yoga. I'm doing my sitting. I'm doing my qigong. It's good for me. Mm-hmm. And certainly there was benefit in certain ways, and there was deepening into practice and all of the things that come with that, all the fruits of those practices. But this kind of gave me a little window into that there was something kind of more fundamental that I was missing in my very approach to every practice.
Yeah, right, right. Right.
And something that went beyond the forms of practice.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And of course, you know, we learn that, I think, if we're effectively practicing anything, we should be integrating in that way, you know, if we're really not being casual about any of these practices. But this kind of forced the issue in a way, because it made me sort of start over.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Right. Totally. Love it. Love it. Yeah, right. I think that's interesting to say. I mean, I think probably if you look around a Zendo, you can probably see maybe a lot of people who are not aware of these patterns. And then you might see a few who are sort of, they're really in it. They're really integrated. They're really beautiful how they're practicing. But I bet you see a lot of things you'd like to work with probably in a Zendo, right?
Oh, my goodness, yeah. You know, it looks like a lot of people are squeezing the life out of themselves, right?
Right.
Right. And then, you know, it begs the question, what are we cultivating?
Yeah, right, right.
We may be cultivating an idea about what we're cultivating, right. But that may not be translating into, you know.
Right, right, right. Totally, totally. And then, you know, ideas about energy, you know, or that, you know, with all this force, there's so many ideas about force and tension, and in reality, often, you know, really opening up and really letting go and not with all this force is when the energy really starts to blossom, you know, and but that's a real tough corner for people to turn, you know?
Yes.
You know?
Well, and I think that's where the teacher's help comes, you know, it becomes kind of critical, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
We don't always know. We're not aware of what we're doing in so many ways.
Yes.
We're not aware of the way that we interfere with our own processes, for example.
Yes, yes, yes.
Get out of our own way, reliably.
Right, right, right. Yeah, no, totally. Interesting. And so, So, you know, what is your practice like now? You know, what is it? I mean, obviously, it sounds like, you know, with the Alexandria, it's not about doing things. It's about all the time, you know, and, but I'd like to know what your practice is kind of like now. What is your, you know, daily, how is it congealed into what you're doing now? Where are you with that creatively? I like to think of these practices as, a really deeply creative experience. And people don't really understand that, but as we go deeper, it becomes more and more creative. And so anyway, I'd like to know what your practice is like, your daily practice or your whatever it is. I'd love that.
Yeah. Well, I practice all the forms still, you know, I get up and I do chanting and I sit. And I do qigong every morning and tai chi every morning, so that's kind of my morning you know, practice period. And then generally I have work, you know, and I'm working on patients and giving a lot of acupuncture treatments, teaching some Alexander technique lessons. I do teach some tai chi and qigong, cool. Some of that. Yeah, but I would say, you know, the learning and kind of creative aspects too, though, you know, music and art and and learning, just the art of learning, you know, I feel like I'm always trying to learn.
Yeah.
I'm trying to approach learning with a kind of spontaneity and curiosity. And freedom, you know, in that. Like I say, learning how to learn in a way.
We in Japanese we say kufu, creative spontaneity, you know. Great word.
Right, and anything can become that, right? I mean, it's the way we apply ourselves to it.
Exactly. Yeah. I love it. Yeah, no, I sometimes feel more akin to dancers or to you know, painters than to really rigid practitioners, you know. Sometimes feels like, oh, that's very dissimilar to my experience these days, you know?
Yeah.
And you're a photographer.
Yeah.
Photos I see all the time. That's amazing. Yeah. Now, I can't understand. Are you like traveling constantly? These are amazing. I don't know where you go. You're seriously.
Well, I do have a backlog. but I love photography. You know, it's never been a real formal thing for me or anything. I mean, I just got a camera one day and I like to spend a lot of time hiking and I just like to take my camera around. Yeah.
The Roshi, Shoto Harada has a student, Jigen Roland, and he's an amazing photographer. And I think his name Jigen means something like, it basically means photography. and it's something like clear eye or something, you know. But I remember one time I was arguing with the Roshi, which is never a good idea, and I was saying like, you know, you could be a novelist and write that, you know, be a Zen person writing novels. And he kind of, no, you can't write a novel without mozo, meaning extraneous thinking, you know. And but he said photography is different because it's real fast. It's just the moment. You're clicking the moment. So that's really interesting. You know?
I still
want to kind of fight with him a little bit about it.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, no, photography is, yeah, that is really interesting because you're just capturing the present moment. It's really beautiful.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, what else? What else about practice do you want to talk about? What else? What are you inspired about with it? I love that.
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking about just some ideas about the Alexander technique, actually, and I'd be curious to, I don't know, kind of bounce ideas off of you with your background and the work that you do, because I think in principle, there's a lot of, at least from what I can see and understand, a lot of similarity there. And I, of course, know that can be expressed and demonstrated in many ways, but
of course, Shoot.
Well, you know, one thing I'm thinking of is this principle of unity of self. And in the Alexander technique, Alexander really went on and on about this, but that we don't have a body.
Yeah.
We don't have a body and mind. We don't have a body-mind connection, as if there's two things that aren't connected that we are seeking to connect.
Yeah.
And this can seem like kind of a semantic thing to a lot of people, and a lot of students want to argue that, for example, when I handle them in a certain way, for example, if I, you know, I'm doing body work, right? You pick up somebody's arm and they're holding it up for you.
Yeah.
And I ask them to let me have their arm.
Yeah.
And they often will say things like, well, it's not me, it's my arm.
Yeah.
Or yeah, I don't mean to do that. It's just my arm. I can't, you know, it's my body. It's not me.
Yeah. Right.
And I've actually found that in practice, really, this, you know, of course this is not a semantic thing at all, that when people grasp the kind of unified functioning, when they get it, the proof is in the pudding. They demonstrate it.
Yeah.
You know, until then it's a concept.
Totally.
And so unified functioning, right, across all activity, I mean, is kind of the practice. But what does that look like? What is that, how is that demonstrated? And how can we discern that? Because what I would say is that, you know, our sensory appreciation is faulty. It's a product of our conditioning, yeah. Right? And we can see this, for example, in a Tai Chi class, for example, or a yoga class, whatever. The teacher says do one thing and you look around the room and people are doing all kinds of different things, really.
Yeah.
Because their kinesthetic sense, their felt sense of themselves,
yeah.
In a way, that perception is already yesterday's news.
Yeah, right.
On the front edge of our experience, that's yesterday's news, what we're perceiving. So the student's kinesthetic awareness cannot really be a reliable guide.
Right.
In that way, in terms of changing habit, that's not to say that the kinesthetic sense doesn't have its place, or like we should get rid of it or anything like that,
right?
Or that we can't learn from it. But in terms of spontaneous action, maybe not a reliable guide.
Right. Sensory amnesia, all that, that's always there in these holding patterns in the body that we are unaware of. Yes.
Right.
Totally. I hear you. No, totally. And I mean, I feel like fundamentally, our bodies are trying to align it all the time, and that the energy is trying to open us up and align us. This is part of my sort of fundamental for me. And then of course we're in the way of that, and we're blocking that unconsciously. And I feel like for me personally, I do a lot of Qigong and a lot of movement practices, but most of them, well, I should say all of them really are not about the movements. Like you say, they're not about the movements. They're really about being able to begin to dialogue with this internal process that's there. And then through that, seeing how the body is trying to open, seeing how the energy is trying to clarify. And so it starts off for me, we're finding our stuck places, and then later it becomes a deeper integrative thing that we're becoming the room, all of that. But I love what you're saying about unity and all that. It's beautiful. Yeah, please.
And that's what you just said too, becoming the room, for example. I think part of any bracing pattern, part of any constriction pattern, is a narrowing of awareness.
Yes.
And that's what I referred to when I said, habits of concentration. A unified field of awareness is a very different thing. And that's you have to be awake. You really have to be alert. You really have to be taking in.
Right.
As opposed to trying to reduce the sort of sensory inputs.
Yes.
But not be perturbed by stimulus of any of it.
Right. I love the idea of my hope is to try to help people to become fascinated all the time with what's happening with this interaction between inner and outer, all of that. And some people are going to become fascinated in that, in the way that I have sort of fallen in love. But that's my hope, is that more and more people will become fascinated in all of that process. Because usually we're a little bit interested, and then we'd really rather do something else. We'd rather focus on other things, or there's this this holding pattern there that we're not able to really open up through,
I think there's a real energy behind that too, an energy behind habit that is constantly being fueled, right? And there's instinctual processes involved in that. We're relating to our environment in a way that is kind of a mismatch. It's a program. We programmed it. And that's, it's interesting. I hear you saying that, you feel that as you remove that interference with sort of natural functioning or whatever you want to call it, that something comes online. You know, I'm curious about that because I think from an Alexander Technique perspective, you know, there's another component to that technique or that practice that involves a conscious sort of direction of use. And that can't be a form of doing. In other words, that can't be a form of muscular tension, right? We don't want to think that we're supposed to sit a certain way and hold it. That's posture. That's trying to stabilize a particular bearing. And the moment we try, actually, we send signals to the muscles and those things fire and we're not conscious of that instantaneous stuff that's happening and we carry things out in an automated way, largely. And so with the Alexander Technique, what we try to do is first stop the interference.
Yeah.
First create the pause in the space, you know, in which we have a shot at a conscious, spontaneous action. But then the way that we do that becomes really a matter of technique. And from that perspective, I would say that, you know, what I see with students is that when they're able to really inhibit or in the sense of like neuromuscular inhibition to prevent excitatory signals to do, to go, to act, there needs to be something else there because the natural thing doesn't necessarily come online. You know, for example, you can watch children, right?
Yeah.
Like little kids, you know, they demonstrate these things naturally and not consciously. They're not engaged in a conscious process of producing these conditions.
Right.
But they demonstrate them.
Right.
They lose it very early, you know, I think because of a lot of
mirroring,
learning, modern environment, all these sorts of things, stimulus kind of overrides it. But but they have it for a period anyways, generally, unless there's some, you know, kind of condition that prevents that. But I don't see that students, you know, when they kind of, when they get out of their way or they kind of get rid of the interference, something skillful doesn't just come online. Like it actually has to be trained. It actually has to be worked out to be able to produce certain kinds of conditions.
Right. I hear you. Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And I know that is the Alexander Technique, and that is, and he was a stutterer, so he had to inhibit that, and then, right? That was the deal with him, right?
Well, he lost his voice.
Yeah.
And, you know, what he noticed was that the thought to speak, or the impulse, I should say, the impulse to speak would produce the condition of the loss of voice.
Right.
And that it wasn't preventing speech, that he had to prevent the impulse to speak.
Yes.
And then he had to see to it that he didn't create any unnecessary muscular contraction his head and neck relationship in order to produce a sound. But that if he tried to do that, it would never work.
Yeah.
And so he had to not think about anything related to speech, but prevent the head to neck misuse pattern. And that if he was successful in that, there was his voice.
Totally.
So it's totally trading, you know, it's like a trading of priorities. Get the thing done. What is the thing we're doing? We throw that out and it's all about this.
Yes. Right. Totally. Love it. Beautiful practice for people, I think. Becoming conscious. What a concept.
Right. I mean, if you look around, it's crazy out there.
Totally. My gosh. Yeah. And, you know, I kind of like the unstructured time personally, and then I like structured time. So I think that's really interesting. just to have time when we're not putting any kind of intention out there, and then seeing what comes out of that. But I don't think that's good to do always either, because then you get locked into some other pattern, you know, you get locked into some other, the plane is flying around in the sky, it's never landing, you know, and so that's really interesting too. I like that dance of having some input in, or whatever word you would use with the Alexander. And then I love to have some totally unstructured time to see what's moving through. But I love what you're saying. Oh, it's really interesting. I think people are really going to get something out of hearing you talk about it. It's awesome. So great. What else? Anything else?
Well, I think I think all of these different things, you know, in some ways are very unique unto themselves, you know. So for example, I don't ever combine the Alexander technique with an acupuncture treatment. You know, it's very delineated in that sense. And I also don't do it with Tai Chi and the Alexander technique, though I do have students who will do both, you know. And I would say that, you know, for example, with Tai Chi, suspend the head top, you know, the spine, the whole thing, you know, all the principles of Tai Chi are kind of the same.
Kind of the same,
You know, but still, I try to keep these things sort of separate in a training context. But I do think there's some really, you know, I can't help but make the connections and appreciate the connections. There's this concept in Qigong and of course Tai Chi about the yi, the intent, right? Yep. And that the intent is what drives the qi, the energetic principle, which drives the form, the structure, right? And so, you know, we can intend, for example, if you get a flat tire, you can intend to change your tire.
Right.
But if you don't actually get out and change the tire, it ain't going to happen as much as you intend for it to happen. Right. And so these things really have to connect, you know, that the intention has to produce the conditions.
Yes.
Right? Yes. And that from non-doing into activity, into action, into doing, you know, these things have to connect. Mm-hmm. And of course, this is such like the front edge of our moment to moment.
Right.
Between intent and action.
Right. Love it. Love to hear you tease apart the minutia of some of this. That's really fun. I think you have a really interesting, sharp brain. Okay, well, wonderful. I think some really good stuff for people to chew on. I've learned a lot from listening to you talk. And how about any closing words about practice or any of this stuff? How about any closing words?
I appreciate your what you've been putting out. You know, I just think it's wonderful. I just think it's great to, like you said, how do we bring all of this stuff into a meaningful way into our life? Because our life is our practice. I mean, that's all these forms are invaluable, and yet here we are, and all of the forms of life, and how do we stay in the creative act with all of it?
Right, stay in the creative act. I love it.
How do we have an open mind? Right.
it's such a cliche, but it's so deep, actually. You know,
it really is.
Yeah. Love it. Well, great. Thank you so much for spending a little time with me. I like it's a little short. I like it short but sweet. That's good. People can find you at the Silver Creek Acupuncture. I like your website. I like it. Your photography is nice and it's kind of sharp. And maybe teaching classes here and there. And I think people are going to get something out of this because, you know, out there in the Zen world, there's so much mental idea about what all this stuff is. So adding an awareness, physical awareness component to this is just, it's really another factor. It's a deep way for people to, people who maybe aren't going to go train in martial arts and they're not going to go train in, you know, Japan or something, they can have some other tools to go deeper in their process, you know. Really beautiful, really beautiful. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Corey. That's a pleasure. I look forward to some future conversations, I hope.
We can go on and on. You come up to the island sometime. We should have some tea or something before you do the O session.
I would love that. Yeah.
Okay, wonderful. And I looks like you have a really nice family. So that was really beautiful. Okay. All right. Thank you. And great to talk with you.
Thank you, Corey.
Okay. And